but this was different. The images, so disturbingly vivid, they often left her gasping and drenched with sweat. But the dreams had begun to take a physical toll, too. She'd been lethargic of late, and punchy. The byproduct of being afraid to close her eyes, for fear of being jolted awake in the wee hours. It didn't take a PhD to figure out what had conjured that first dream, or to understand why she was still having them. Wade may have strayed into prickly territory, but his observations had thrown a floodlight on things she'd been trying very hard not to see. Primarily, that she had purposely been ducking questions about Stephen's Jane Doe. And now, more than a month later, she still hadn't plucked up the courage to pick up the phone. On impulse, or perhaps out of defiance, she reached for her cell. For better or worse, it was time to stop wondering. "I'd like to speak to Detective Connolly," she said briskly, when a Sergeant Wood answered on the second ring.
"I'm sorry, ma'am. Detective Connolly is no longer with the department."
For a moment, she thought she'd heard him wrong. "Did you say he's no longer with the department?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"What does that mean?" There was a pause, as if he didn't quite understand the question.
"It means he's not here, that he's taken early retirement."
"When?"
"First of the year, I believe. Is there someone else I can connect you to?"
"No, yes. I'd like to speak to whoever has taken over Detective Connolly's cases."
"And may I have your name?"
"Christine Ludlow. I was Stephen Ludlow's wife, and I was hoping..."
"One moment, please."
The line abruptly went silent. A moment later, there was a new voice in her ear.
"This is Captain Billings, Mrs. Ludlow, with the Office of Public Affairs. How can I help you?"
"Are you Detective Connolly's boss?"
"Not exactly, though I did outrank him, if that's what you're asking."
Christy Lynn fumbled for a response. The truth was, she didn't know what she was asking. She was still trying to wrap her head around the fact that Connolly was gone, when she was almost certain he'd told her he was still 2 years from retirement.
"Mrs. Ludlow?"
"Yes, I'm sorry. I was hoping to speak to whoever was handling Detective Connolly's cases. I've been trying to get some information about my husband's accident, particularly about the woman who was in the car with him that night."
"Your husband's case was closed months ago, Mrs. Ludlow. There was no indication of foul play, and the tox levels all came back within legal limits. The ME's finding was accidental death by drowning."
"And the woman?" There was a brief stretch of silence.
"The woman?"
"Yes, Captain, the woman. I'm sure you remember her. Her pictures were in all the tabloids thanks to someone in your department." The captain cleared his throat, a halting, awkward sound.
"Yes, of course. That was... unfortunate. But I'm afraid we're not releasing any information with regard to the second victim. It's a rather sensitive matter, after all, particularly in light of your husband's high visibility, and the family has a right to privacy. Perhaps it would be best to simply... let it lie."
Christy Lynn's blood began to simmer. "It's a little late to be worrying about sensitivity, don't you think? And where was all this concern for privacy when the press was camped out in my driveway, passing around photos that someone in your department leaked?"
"Mrs. Ludlow."
His voice was sharper now, more like a lawyer's than a police captain's.
"There has been no confirmation that those photos were leaked by anyone in this department, though I do understand how difficult this must be for you. And despite what you might think, we take a family's right to privacy very seriously, which is why we won't be releasing any information we may or may not have on a second victim."
"And what about my rights as a wife? Do you not take those seriously?"
"Forgive me for sounding unfeeling. I don't mean to be. But that really isn't our concern. I hope you'll understand. Goodbye."
There wasn't time to protest before the line went dead. Christy Lynn stared at the blank phone screen with a mixture of confusion and annoyance. They were clearly eager to put the leak behind them, but where did that leave her? Her hands shook as she scrolled through her contacts for Connolly's cell number. If the good detective was no longer a member of the Clear Harbor Police Force, he might finally be willing to help. Unfortunately, The number was no longer in service, which seemed odd. She could see a home phone being disconnected if he had moved, but most people kept their cell numbers, didn't they? Her next call was to directory assistance, but the home number they gave her turned out to be disconnected as well. She remembered him saying something about a sailboat in the Keys, but trying to locate Connolly on one of the 40 islands that comprised the Florida Keys would be like looking for a needle in a haystack. She was still contemplating what to do next when Tamara appeared with a tall to-go cup in her hand. "What's that?" "A triple shot latte," Tamara said, with an unmistakable air of pity. "Do I look that bad?" "Nothing a little caffeine and concealer won't fix. By the way, you have a visitor." Christy Lynn smothered a sigh. At this rate, she was never going to get to the invoices. "Who is it?" Tamara flashed a grin. "I'll give you a hint. Tall, dark, and scruffy." "Wade's here?" "Of course he's here. He's here all the time. As if you didn't know." "Yes, but not to see me." Tamara rolled her eyes, as if she were dealing with a particularly dense child. "Yeah, whatever. Anyway, consider yourself informed." Wade was in the cafe when she stepped out of the back room. He nodded as she approached.
"Hello."
"Hello." His eyes narrowed slightly.
"You okay? You look tired."
"Yes, I've been told. What's up?"
"I came to ask you to lunch."
It took a moment to process the words, and she still wasn't sure she had it right. "What?"
"I said I came to ask you to lunch."
"Why?" It was hardly a gracious reply, but she was too surprised to search for the Miss Manners response. They saw each other several times a week. Or perhaps, avoided each other was a more accurate way to describe the curt nods that passed for a greeting whenever they happened to make eye contact in the cafe. How had they gone from that to lunch?
"I'm proposing a truce. I've decided it's silly that we keep bumping into each other and never know what to say."
"I don't keep bumping into you," Christy Lynn pointed out coolly. "You keep coming into my store."
"Fair enough. Sometimes I need a change of scenery, and this works. So what do you say? Lunch?"
"I am working, or trying to. It's not going very well."
"Anything I can do to help?"
"Not unless you want to unpack and shelve 3 boxes of books."
"Tempting, but I'll take a rain check."
So it was more of a hypothetical offer then. He grinned, suddenly looking very boyish.
"Something like that. Maybe we can do lunch another time."
Christy Lynn gave him a half-hearted shrug. He was obviously intent on clearing the air between them, though after so many years, she wasn't sure why he cared. Maybe he was one of those guys who needed to be liked. She, on the other hand, was perfectly willing to keep him at arm's length.
"Yeah, maybe."
She watched him leave, waiting until he had climbed into the Jeep and driven away before turning back to Tamara, who was quietly grinning from ear to ear as she pretended to wipe down the counter. Christy Lynn shook a finger at her across the counter. "I know what that smile's about. And you can get that idea right out of your head. We don't even like each other." "He's hot, though, isn't he?"
"I'm not paying you to ogle the customers."
"No," Tamara said, smirking, "but it's a nice perk." "Hey, what's going on in here?" Aileen had appeared, a feather duster in hand. "You're not supposed to be having fun without me." "I don't know about fun," Tamara said saucily. "But I'm pretty sure the boss has an admirer."
"No, the boss doesn't," Christy Lynn snapped. "Now get to work, both of you. I'll be paying bills if you need me. And no whispering behind my back or I'll know."
She could hear Tamara and Aileen already giggling as she walked away. For weeks now, they'd been making snide remarks about the frequency of Wade's visits, though they clearly had the wrong idea about his motives. It was understandable, she supposed. Seeing what they wanted to see. They were young and still starry-eyed, too naive to know that true love and happily ever after were the stuff of fairy tales. And that sometimes, the line between frog and prince got pretty blurry. 21. Monk's Corner, South Carolina, April 12, 1998. It usually starts over cigarettes. Who smoked the last one? Whose turn it is to buy? And eventually shifts to beer. Tonight's sparring match is no different. The petulant sniping, the petty slurs, the raised voices escalating into full-on tirades. Christy Lynn is in her room, nose buried in a history book. You too on full blast to drown out the ugliness going on in the kitchen. It's hardly a new occurrence. Although Derek, the latest in her mother's recent stretch of live-in losers, is louder than the last few. He scares her sometimes when he drinks, which is most of the time. He swears and throws things and is quick with a slap when her mother talks back. It's better when they're both high, or at least quieter. But that's only when there's money for a score. They've been on COD status with their dealer since her mother lost her job at the Piggly Wiggly. Borrowing. That's what her mother had called it when they caught her skimming money from the register. Her boss had called it embezzlement and fired her. The only reason she wasn't locked up is because he dropped the charges when she told the police she had a little girl at home that she was raising on her own. They're letting her pay it back $50 at a time, except she isn't having much luck finding another job. Someone from the Piggly Wiggly must have let the cat out of the bag, which means it's just tip money from the getaway lounge and whatever Derek brings home when he's sober enough to work. Christy Lynn puts in as many hours as they'll give her at the donut shop. It's not much, but it helps with food and maybe the lights. Not the rent, though. That's past due again. 2 months. But no one talks about that, because no one knows what happens next, and they don't seem to care. They just drink and fight and get high. The yelling from the kitchen ratchets up again, unintelligible except for the occasional string of profanities bleeding under the door. Christy Lynn cranks up the music another notch and returns to her history book. She knows only too well the folly of intervening in her mother's squabbles. Not that she hasn't tried. For her efforts over the years, she's been kicked, slapped, and punched in the head. But that isn't the worst of it. The worst is that her mother always ends up resenting her the next day, as if she'd rather wake up with a black eye or a broken jaw than risk driving away her latest Prince Charming. Suddenly, over the rhythmic grind of Bullet the Blue Sky, comes the shattering of glass. Three explosions in rapid succession, followed by a howl of rage, and then a blood-curdling shriek. Christy Lynn's history book tumbles to the floor as she scrambles off the bed and down the hall toward the war-torn kitchen. But she's already too late. Charlene Parker is sprawled on her knees like a heap of broken kindling, a bloody hand clutched to the left side of her face. Christy Lynn stares in horror at the steady ooze of red trickling through her mother's fingers and onto the grimy kitchen floor. Above her, Derek stands with legs wide apart, weaving a little on his feet. "What did you do?" Christy Lynn demands, eyeing the paring knife still clenched in his fist. "She's covered with blood." The blade in his hand is bloody too. Derek looks down at it, as if surprised to find it there. "Bitch threw a bottle at me," he growls, revealing bloody gums and a missing incisor. His lip is split like a ripe plum, his chin smeared with blood. He takes a step forward, but Christy Lynn is there, blocking him. "Get away from her," she hurls at him, "or I'll do more than that." Charlene is sobbing, flailing drunkenly as she struggles to rise, then slips again in the rapidly growing slick of blood. "You cut me," she wails raggedly. "You cut my face, you drunken bastard." It takes some doing, but Christy Lynn manages to pull her mother to her feet. She's snarling now and sobbing, the front of her t-shirt smeared a bright, gory red. Christy Lynn feels a cold whirl of panic, a faintly metallic tang at the back of her throat. She's never seen so much blood. Her mother's blood. And for a moment, The room sways as she registers the damage. The left side of Charlene Parker's face has been flayed from cheek to chin, revealing a gaping span of quivering pink flesh beneath. There will be a scar, Christine Lynn notes dimly. Her mother's beautiful face is in ruins. And then there are sirens wailing outside the apartment complex, blue lights flashing coldly through thin curtains. Fists begin to pound on the apartment door, mingling with Charlene's desperate wails.
Police, open up!
Help me! Charlene bellows over the pounding. He's trying to kill me! Derek looks down at the knife in his hand, and for a moment, Christy Lynn is sure he's about to lunge at one of them. Desperate men do desperate things. Instead, he drops the knife, frantically casting about for some alternate route of escape. Before he can manage a step, there's the shriek of splintering wood, and then the police are exploding through the door, guns drawn, like on TV. Christy Lynn's legs wobble with relief at the sight of them. For once, she's grateful for nosy neighbors. Derek stands stonily as he's handcuffed and read his rights. Christy Lynn watches with a kind of savage satisfaction. She's glad he's going to jail. Glad he won't be hanging around anymore, freeloading off what little they have. But her satisfaction is short-lived. The medics have arrived and are in the kitchen examining Charlene, starting an IV and tending to her face. The police are in the kitchen too, reading Charlene her rights. Assault, they explain, not self-defense, because she threw the bottle at Derek before he came at her with a knife, and not after. Christy Lynn is allowed to ride in the ambulance, but when they arrive at the hospital, she's told to have a seat in the waiting room. She can only watch helplessly as they wheel her mother away. It's nearly 5 a.m. before she's allowed to see her. The room is cold and smells of antiseptic. Its stillness after the clamor of the waiting room is unsettling. Charlene lies very still in the slightly raised bed, a tube in her arm, her left cheek swathed in gauze. The doctors have sewn up her face. Her lids flutter open.
Baby.
Christy Lynn stares down at the bed, and for a moment, her mother's face goes blurry. She used to be the most beautiful girl in Monk's Corner, and now. Does it hurt?
Not now.
Charlene's fingers creep to the bandage on the left side of her face. Her nails are still crusted with blood.
They gave me something. Numb.
Did they say when you can come home? Charlene closes her eyes, turning her head as a pair of tears squeeze from beneath her lashes.
I don't think I'll be coming home, baby. Not for a while, at least. I'm in some trouble.
Trouble. The word hovers ominously in the quiet.
But Derek, it isn't just tonight, Christy Lynn.
The money you took from the Piggly Wiggly? She nods, sighing heavily.
And other things.
What things?
Things I didn't want you to know about. It has to do with a guy I know. An arrangement we had.
Sex? Christy Lynn asks softly.
Yes, sort of.
So you could get drugs? She nods again, eyes skittering away.
And one night I got caught. It didn't amount to much. Solicitation, first offense. But it all adds up, and now...
You'll go to jail?
That's how it's looking.
Christy Lynn takes an involuntary step back. What about me? Did you tell them you had a daughter?
There are places.
No!
It'll only be for a few months, she promises, in the wheedling, petulant voice she hauls out when she's made a mess of things.
A year at the most. It'll be over before you know it. And when it is, we'll be together again. We'll move away, start somewhere new. It won't be so bad, you'll see. You'll even be able to visit me.
But Christy Lynn has stopped listening.
She doesn't want to visit her mother in jail or move somewhere new when this is all over. Because it will never be over. It will only start again in a new town with a new set of problems and probably a new dealer.
I'm sorry, baby,
Charlene whispers, reaching for her daughter.
So sorry.
I know, Mama, she says quietly, ignoring her mother's outstretched hand.
You're always sorry.
22. Sweetwater, Virginia, May 1st, 2017. Christy Lynn eyed Wade's Jeep in the driveway as she lifted her hand and knocked a third time. He was clearly home. Was he ignoring her? Paying her back for snubbing his lunch invitation? If so, it probably wasn't a great time to ask for a favor. She knocked again and waited, almost relieved when there was still no answer. It had been a crazy idea anyway. She was about to step off the porch when she heard a door slam somewhere around back. She weighed her options. Suck it up and ask what she'd come to ask, or leave with her pride intact and no hope of getting the answers she now knew she wanted. Skirting the remains of last winter's woodpile, she made her way around the back of the cabin. Wade was coming down the deck steps, a red nylon tote slung over his shoulder as he headed for a small wooden canoe beached at the waterline. He had one leg in when he spotted her. He straightened and stood, staring at her, a hand raised to shield his eyes against the lowering sun. Hello, she said awkwardly, as if she'd been caught trespassing.
Have you changed your mind about lunch?
She ducked her head sheepishly. I came to talk.
About a truce?
Christy Lynn smothered a groan, too weary to spar. Can't we just talk?
Get in the boat.
Christy Lynn's eyes went wide. What?
If you want to talk, you'll need to do it on the water.
She laughed, though something told her he wasn't kidding. I'm not really dressed.
We won't be water skiing or anything. Kick off your shoes and leave your purse. You'll be fine.
Christy Lynn eyed the canoe warily, asking herself again just how badly she wanted Wade's help.
What's wrong? Can't you swim?
Of course I can swim.
Then what's the problem?
When it became clear he had no intention of relenting, Christy Lynn dropped her purse and kicked off her ballet flats. Wade steadied the boat as she stepped in, instructing her to keep both hands on the gunwales, which she assumed meant the sides, as she inched her way forward, then turned and carefully lowered herself onto the narrow cane seat. A moment later, Wade was pushing away from shore, settled across from her as they headed smoothly out onto the water. For a time, neither spoke. Wade paddling with close, easy strokes, Christy Lynn marveling at the echo of sunlit clouds mirrored in the lake's glassy surface.
It's beautiful.
She took a deep breath, feeling herself relax as she filled her lungs with pine-scented air. She hadn't meant to say it aloud. In fact, she didn't realize she had until Wade met her gaze.
Yes, it is. So?
So? He shrugged. His face blank as he pulled the paddle out of the water and laid it across his knees.
It's your meeting.
Christy Lynn nodded. Yes, I guess it is. She paused to regroup, then began again. The last time I was here, you said something. You said I might not really want to know the truth about the woman in Stephen's car.
Yeah, sorry. I had no right to say that stuff. Your grief is none of my business.
No, it isn't. But that doesn't change the fact that you were probably right. The longer I thought about it, and about what I might learn, the more I realized I was afraid.
Of what?
Her eyes were fixed on her lap, fingers pleating and unpleating the hem of her skirt. Do you have any idea what it's like to learn your spouse's darkest secrets from a pack of reporters? To be the last one to know he's been leading some kind of double life?
No, but I can imagine.
She lifted her chin. Can you?
I think so, yes.
Mrs. Ludlow, do you know the woman they pulled from your husband's car the night he died, and were they involved sexually? Do you know how long the relationship had been going on? Have there been other women, or was she the first? She held his gaze, fighting tears that were more about anger than self-pity. And those were the polite questions. But the worst part was I couldn't have answered them if I wanted to. And it made me ashamed. How could I not know what my own husband was up to? And then when you said what you said the other night, about me not wanting to know, I was ashamed all over again. Because I realized you were right. I didn't want to know. Not really. Wade reached for the red tote and unzipped it, producing a paper towel and a bottled water.
Here, he said, pushing the paper towel into her hands. You're leaking.
Sorry. She felt foolish as she blotted her eyes. I didn't come here because I wanted you to feel sorry for me. I just wanted you to understand.
I get it. I do.
He was foraging in the tote again, pulling out a variety of leftover containers, peeling off lids and balancing them on his lap.
Because I've seen it firsthand. The news business was different when I got in. It used to be about real news. Now it's about voyeurism and the public's need to revel in the suffering of others. The human fallout doesn't enter into it. It's about ratings, circulation, copies sold.
She dabbed at her eyes again.
And that's why you quit?
Yes.
It had been coming for a while. But things reached critical mass when they asked me to interview a kid who just watched his mother die at the Crystal Lake shooting. So here I am.
Writing your book?
Trying to, yes. Want some dinner?
Christy Lynn blinked at him, surprised by the abrupt change of subject. For a moment, she considered pressing for more, but something in his expression warned her off. Instead, she surveyed the makeshift picnic spread out on his lap, cold chicken, fresh fruit, and what looked like potato salad.
Go on, Wade prompted, holding out the container of chicken. There's plenty.
She chose a drumstick and began nibbling, not because she was hungry, but because she wasn't ready to tell him why she had really come.
This is delicious, she said between bites, an awkward attempt at small talk.
Where did you get it? Wade glanced up, looking mildly insulted.
I didn't get it. I made it.
Well then, I'm impressed.
He shrugged. Not much to it, actually. Lemon, olive oil, some rosemary, and a little garlic. Marinate it for a couple of hours, then throw it on the grill. The potato salad, on the other hand, is from the deli. If it isn't some form of pasta or something I can toss on the grill, I'm fairly hopeless.
Christy Lynn found herself smiling. I'm still impressed. I don't think Stephen knew how to turn on the oven.
My ex-wife's idea of a home-cooked meal was a coffee and a Twinkie. She was a whiz with a takeout menu, though.
He reached back into the tote, producing a fork, and handed it to her, along with a container of potato salad.
Sorry, there's only one. I wasn't expecting company. You go first.
They ate in silence as dusk settled around them, the quiet broken only by the occasional splash or a bird call from high in the trees. After a few bites, she wiped the fork with her paper towel and handed it back to Wade, along with a potato salad, watching as he dove in with gusto. So, she said, trying to sound offhand and failing miserably, are you still connected to any of the people you worked with at Review? Wade looked up and stopped chewing.
We're going there again?
No, she said quickly. But yes, a little. I was wondering if you might be able to help me. He suddenly looked leery.
Help you how?
Christy Lynn clamped her hands between her knees and glanced away. I called the Clear Harbor police this afternoon. They said Daniel Connolly had taken early retirement. So I did what you said and went over his head, or tried to. No one would tell me anything, not even her name. So I was wondering if I could get one of my parasitic reporter pals to dig up the dirt on her. Christy Lynn felt her cheeks go hot. I suppose I deserved that. I was merely pointing out the irony of the situation, in case you'd missed it. He was enjoying himself immensely, and she supposed he had a right to that. You don't have to explain it to me, she told him sheepishly. I'm aware. In fact, I almost didn't come, but I was out of options. So here I am, sitting in your boat, eating crow. If you'll just row me back to shore, I'll go.
Paddle.
What?
You don't row a canoe. You paddle. Oars are attached. Paddles aren't.
Fine. Then will you paddle me back to shore?
No.
Christy Lynn's eyes widened.
No?
I have some questions first.
Such as?
Such as, what do you plan to do with the information you're asking for?
She scowled at him, confused by the question.
I don't plan to do anything with it. I just want to know who she was.
My husband died with a half-naked woman in his car. I have a right to at least know her name, even if the police don't agree.
And how will her name change anything?
It won't. But at least I'll have some closure.
Knowing the name of your husband's mistress will give you closure.
Christy Lynn squirmed on the narrow cane seat. He was doing it again, studying her, probing for more than she wanted to tell, and he was good at it. I'm not planning on causing trouble, if that's what you're asking.
It is, in part. You're asking me to do something I normally wouldn't consider. But I do think you have the right to know her name, even if I don't understand your need to know it. If I agree to do this, I have to know you're not going to use the information to hurt someone.
Her chin came up a notch. I don't want to hurt anyone. I just want to close the door on that chapter of my life. I thought that was what you wanted me to do.
Where does what I want come into it? I just asked a question. But I'm starting to think there's something else going on, something you're not telling me.
Like what exactly?
I don't know, but it's there. And this isn't just the journalist in me talking. I can feel it. What's really going on?
A dream, she said grudgingly. But the words were almost a relief as they left her lips. Almost every night. It's her. Under the water. Her eyes are open, like they were in the morgue photos. Only she isn't dead. She's blinking, and her mouth is moving, like she's trying to talk to me. Only I can't hear what she's saying. Christy Lynn closed her eyes, trying to keep the quaver from her voice. I want it to stop.
And having a name will make it stop.
I don't know. I just thought... She shrugged, wiping at her cheek with the back of her hand. I honestly don't know what I thought. Never mind. It was a stupid idea.
I'll make a call.
The canoe rocked lightly as Christy Lynn jerked her head up. You will?
There's a guy I used to work with at Review, Glenn Hoyt. He's a crime beat writer, the old school type, with plenty of contacts. He might be helpful.
Thank you.
You do know you're probably not going to like what you find out, right?
Yes.
And you're okay with that?
She returned his gaze, frankly. Honestly, I can't imagine learning anything worse than what I already know. Wade grunted darkly as he began to pack up the food containers.
First rule of journalism, never assume you've seen the worst.
23. Sweetwater, Virginia, May 9th, 2017. Christy Lynn juggled an armload of cookbooks nearly dropping them all as she reached for the phone. Good afternoon, the Crooked Spine.
Since when does the boss answer the phone?
The sound of Wade's voice caught her off guard. Since Aileen's out having a root canal, and next Sunday is Mother's Day, they're running me ragged around here.
Sounds like it. Are you getting any sleep?
Here and there, she said, trying not to sound evasive, even as she avoided the question. What's up?
Actually, I had a phone call this morning. I have some information.
Oh. The news nearly knocked the breath out of her, but it was what she wanted, wasn't it? All the gritty details.
If you've changed your mind.
No, I haven't changed my mind. I just didn't expect to hear back so soon. It's barely been a week.
I told you, my guy has connections.
Oh, right. Christy Lynn pulled in a deep breath and let it out slowly. Okay, I'm ready.
I'm not sure doing this over the phone is a good idea, especially with you at work. Come by the cabin after you close up.
Christy Lynn felt her stomach clench, like the sensation you got when you looked down from the top of the Ferris wheel and realized just how far the drop was. He wouldn't tell her over the phone? What had he found out? Is it that bad?
I just think it would be better if we do it in person, when you'll have time to process.
All right, then. I'll see you as soon as I lock up. It was nearly 7 by the time she pulled into Wade's driveway. He was already at the door when she stepped onto the porch, a kitchen towel over one shoulder, a wooden spoon in his hand.
I thought you forgot about me.
Sorry, we had a few last-minute customers, and then there was a ton of stuff to reshelve. The mingled aromas of garlic and oregano enveloped her as she followed him inside. Oh, no. I'm screwing up your dinner again.
Our dinner. Please tell me you like spaghetti.
I love spaghetti, but I didn't come to eat. I can come back, really.
Don't be silly. You're here, and there's enough to feed a small army. Besides, we're not discussing anything until you've been fed.
He turned, heading back to the kitchen.
If you get any thinner, you're going to disappear on me completely, which would sting since I think we're actually on the verge of becoming friends.
Christy Lynn found herself grinning. When had he become charming? So I'm being blackmailed?
Precisely.
She had no choice but to follow him to the kitchen where a pot of sauce bubbled on the stove. She watched as he dropped his spoon in, then lifted it out for a taste.
I think I might have just pulled it off.
I thought you only tackled things you could cook on the grill.
Well, I cheated a little. I started with the bottled stuff, then doctored it up. But I think it's pretty good. The salad's made. All I need to do is throw the pasta in to boil.
Christy Lynn eyed him warily. He was too cheerful, too chatty. It set off warning bells in her head. Is this your way of softening whatever you're about to tell me, a high-carb meal?
Actually, it's my way of avoiding work. My writing day pretty much sucked, so I thought I'd try my hand at cooking instead.
Christy Lynn wandered to the small bistro table in the corner as he wrestled with a box of vermicelli. His Mac was there and open, a Word document up on the screen. She had just begun to read the opening lines of Chapter 18 when Wade snaked an arm past her and lowered the screen.
Please don't read that.
Sorry. Force of habit. The editor in me, I guess. I should have known you'd be the protective type. A lot of men are.
More like the embarrassed type, he corrected with a scowl. Not one of my better efforts, I'm afraid. In fact, I meant to delete the whole scene.
It isn't as easy as it looks, is it?
What?
Writing the great American novel.
I take it that's a shot about my lack of reverence for your husband's work.
No, just an observation. You did call him a hack, though, which is a pretty harsh thing to say to a man who's cranked out a dozen bestsellers.
Cranked being the operative word.
Christy Lynn bit back her initial response, confused by a knee-jerk need to defend Stephen, despite the validity of Wade's criticism. Habit, she supposed. Or misplaced loyalty. Like the night she had unloaded on him in the bar at the Omni. It doesn't really matter now, does it? Can't we just drop it? Wade gave the pasta a quick stir, then set down a spoon.
I just think if you're going to put 100,000 words on paper, you should take the time to choose the right ones, instead of just grabbing the ones on the bottom shelf. Writing should be about quality, not quantity.
I agree with that. In fact, I tell my writers the same thing. But there's a lot less time to reach for those top-shelf words when you're writing to contract. Deadlines are real, and if you want to keep getting paid to write books, you treat them as sacred. It's a matter of finding the line between efficiency and integrity, and then walking it. It's tricky.
Did Stephen walk that line?
What do you mean?
Do you think your husband cared about integrity?
Christy Lynn stared at him, wondering if she'd lost the thread of the conversation. Are we talking about writing or something else?
I'm talking about both. About everything. Integrity isn't something you have in some parts of your life and not in others. You either have it, or you don't. I'm asking if you think Stephen did.
Christy Lynn was both startled and confused by the intensity in his tone. Under the circumstances, I'm not sure I'm the right person to ask.
You were married to him. That makes you the perfect person to ask.
I can tell you he was dedicated to his career, that he worked all the time and never missed a deadline. He started every morning at 5 and worked past midnight a lot of nights. Sometimes he'd even go off and check into a hotel somewhere so he could... She stopped mid-sentence, letting the words trail away. Except he wasn't working, was he? He was with her. Wade dropped his gaze to the floor.
I didn't mean to dredge up.
Your pasta's about to boil over, she said flatly, cutting him off and effectively ending the conversation. The sooner they got through dinner, the sooner she would have her answers. They ate out on the deck, or at least attempted to. 30 minutes in, Christy Lynn gave up the pretense and pushed back her plate. I'm sorry, I just can't.
You didn't like it?
No, it's fine. I'm just not hungry. It was the truth. She was too keyed up to eat. In fact, she wasn't sure she had tasted a single bite of what was on her plate. I'm sorry. You went to all this trouble and I'm being rude.
Forget it. It gave me a chance to eat off real plates instead of wolfing down my food over the sink. That's what guys do, by the way. When they live all alone in the woods, they turn into cavemen.
Do you actually like living up here all by yourself? He leaned back in his chair, propping a leg on the corner of the table.
Never really thought about it. It is what it is, I guess.
Christy Lynn squinted one eye against the sun as she continued to study him. His answer had been just a little too nonchalant to be convincing. I don't think I knew you were married the first time we met, but I seem to remember there being a woman with you. Sleek, brunette, very glam.
Simone.
What happened there?
I think the question you're looking for is, who happened?
There was someone else.
Someone else's, he corrected dryly. Plural. She was ambitious, I'll give her that, but not very good at covering her tracks. To be honest, I think she stopped bothering. When I finally confronted her, she told me she was glad I knew, that I'd become a self-righteous bore, and she didn't know why she ever married me.
Christy Lynn winced, a mingled pang of pity and guilt. It had never occurred to her that he might have suffered a few heartaches of his own, or that when he spoke about infidelity, he was speaking from experience. I suppose it would be hard to save any marriage after that. He eyed her grimly.
The phrase, all the king's horses and all the king's men, comes to mind.
He reached past his water and grabbed his beer instead, draining it in one long swallow.
It was inevitable, I suppose. We weren't a couple. We were a team. Work was what we had. Maybe all we had. When I left Week in Review, that was gone. It's taken me a while, but I've come to terms with it.
She studied him a moment, the tight lines around his mouth, the rapid tick that had begun to pulse at his temple. Have you? He looked away, but not before a shadow darkened his face.
I thought we were supposed to be talking about Stephen.
Wade's words felt like a glass of icy water poured down her back. She pulled in a lungful of air, then pushed it back out very slowly, hands braced on the arms of her chair.
Yes, we are. So let's have it. Her name was Honey Rawlings.
Christy Lynn sat very still, letting the name play over in her head, and for one terrible moment, she was back in the morgue, staring down at the chalk-white face from her nightmares, beautiful and bloodless.
Honey.
Did your source happen to mention how they met?
I'm afraid not, but we do know she was from West Virginia, a little spit of a town called Riddlesville.
He pulled a folded sheet of paper from his shirt pocket and laid it open on the table.
It appears she still has family there, a grandmother named Loretta, and a brother, the Honorable Reverend Ray Rawlings. We did manage to find an address for the grandmother, but if either of them has a phone, it isn't listed. Not sure if that's new since the accident or not. It could be, though. Apparently the family is a bit sensitive about Honey's involvement with a married man. Their brother has threatened to sue the entire state of Maine if his sister's name ever leaks in connection with your husband's, which is why I'm guessing the police have been so tight-lipped.
Christy Lynn stared at the scribbled notes. Honey Rawlings of Riddlesville, West Virginia. She had expected to feel something. Relief? Closure? Anything. But Wade was right. Nothing had changed. Nothing at all. Still, he had done what he promised.
I don't know how to thank you. I was...
There's more.
Christy Lynn leaned back in her chair, waiting.
Your contact at the station. The detective friend of Stevens.
Connolly.
Yes, Connolly. He was the leak. Apparently he talked one of the maintenance guys from the morgue into snapping some shots of Honey with his phone. Word on the street is they each netted five figures. Hence the detective's so-called early retirement.
Christy Lynn shook her head, still trying to digest the news. He claimed to be Stephen's friend, and the whole time he was lecturing her about policies and procedures, he'd been scheming to make a buck off the death of her husband.
So that's it? He's just allowed to retire?
My guess is he was told to clean out his desk and allowed to slink off to Florida like the reptile he is. And just like that, it all goes away.
Christy Lynn shook her head, disgusted. Another body blow, and one more thing that wasn't what it seemed. Suddenly she was exhausted, too tired or disillusioned to vent the frustration roiling in her chest.
Is that all?
Wade seemed surprised by the question.
Isn't that enough?
I was hoping your guy might have learned when it started, or how they met.
Sorry. If you want those kinds of details, you're going to have to talk to her family. He did do all the standard legwork, though. Ran the usual searches through Factiva and Lexus. Even talked to one of his guys.
One of his guys?
An investigator. At least that's what he calls them. A little shady, but they aren't shy when it comes to turning over rocks.
And?
And nothing.
Nothing?
No arrests, no public records. Sketchy work history. Waitressing mostly. A stint at the local grocer. He did manage to dig up an old yearbook photo from Riddlesville High, which he emailed to me if you really want it. But that was the extent of it. It would appear Miss Rawlings kept a pretty low profile before hitching her wagon to Stevens.
Christy Lynn stared down at the spaghetti, congealing on her plate, as she absorbed the information, trying to make sense of her disappointment. Wade had been right. She'd been kidding herself, thinking a name would be enough. She wanted more. Needed more. But what exactly? Did she even know?
Sorry, Wade said, interrupting her thoughts. That last crack was indelicate.
Yes, but factual. It seems your friend was very thorough. I was just hoping... She paused, shaking her head. I don't know what I was hoping.
The things you want to know aren't something a reporter or PI is going to be able to get at. No one will. You understand that, right?
Christy Lynn picked up the page of notes, running a finger thoughtfully along one of its creases. I could talk to the grandmother. To Loretta.
Christy Lynn.
She's a woman. She'll understand me needing to know.
No, she won't. Her loss is different than yours. She lost a granddaughter, not a philandering husband.
Christy Lynn folded the paper and laid it in her lap. I just want the dream to stop. Wade said nothing for a moment, as if weighing his next words very carefully.
Before, it was just her name. Now it's where they met, and how long ago. There's a point where wanting to know becomes something else, Christy Lynn.
She heaved a sigh. I know, it's crazy.
No, not crazy, but painful. And not just for you. The woman just lost her granddaughter. Think about how you'd feel in her shoes.
It's not like I'd be badgering her. We'd just talk.
Woman to woman, you mean?
There was no mistaking his sarcasm. Christy Lynn stood and moved to the railing. You don't understand.
No, I don't. Because we talked about this when you first came to me. I told you, I needed to be sure you weren't going to use whatever you found out to cause trouble. And here you are, thinking about doing exactly that.
Christy Lynn turned to face him. Yes, here I am. And I meant what I said. This isn't about causing trouble. It's about a ghost. A woman whose name I don't know. Whose face I see every time I close my eyes.
I understand the pain you must be feeling. What I don't understand is how you think what you're talking about is going to fix any of it. Stephen's dead. Honey's dead. And you're here, in Sweetwater, starting a new life. Maybe that needs to be enough.
She forced her eyes to his, her throat burning with the effort it took not to tear up. What if it isn't?
Did you love him?
What?
Before all this, did you love Stephen?
Christy Lynn's mouth worked soundlessly, sensing a trap in the question. He was my husband, she said finally.
So, a ring, a piece of paper, that's love.
It was a commitment. She shifted her gaze toward the lake, where a pair of egrets waded near shore. Or it was supposed to be.
It takes two people to make a commitment work, Christy Lynn.
I suppose.
Are you going to contact Loretta Rawlings?
She thought about the question. He was right. Of course he was right. About all of it. So why couldn't she let it go? I don't know, she answered finally. I know you think I shouldn't, and you're probably right. But I need some time.
Time for what?
She looked at him then, shaking her head. I don't know that either. 24. Sweetwater, Virginia, May 18, 2017. It had taken Christy Lynn more than a week to make her decision. A week of grappling with her conscience, of weighing a wife's right to know against a grandmother's right to grieve in private, of struggling with her promise to Wade. Honey Rawlings. She had waited for the stab of jealousy the first time she heard the name, had braced for the squeeze in her chest, the heaviness in the pit of her stomach, the things any red-blooded wife should feel. But it hadn't come. Instead, she'd felt only an obsessive curiosity, and shame that she had been so blind, so gullible, so unplugged from her own marriage. Had Stephen really been that good at covering his tracks, or had she simply stopped paying attention? She cringed as she recalled Wade's point-blank question.
Did you love him?
Her response couldn't have been more tepid if they'd been talking about her mailman. It was hard to deny that their marriage had lost some of its spark over the last few years. As the demands of Stephen's career took center stage, their lives had intersected less and less, until they seemed to have little to talk about. Toward the end, even their sex life had become more about habit than passion. But that was normal, wasn't it? For things to settle into predictable patterns, for the sameness to set in. The truth was, It had been the sameness she most enjoyed about her life with Stephen. The sense of stability that came with knowing every morning when she opened her eyes exactly what the day would hold. But they had also enjoyed a lifestyle she could never have imagined growing up. Money in the bank, a stunning home, travel, and a fashionable social circle. She had never stopped to wonder if it was enough for Stephen. And that was why she was going to West Virginia, to learn what the missing piece might be. Because a sparse background check and a high school yearbook photo weren't enough. And because her own attempts at online sleuthing had turned up even less. But then, they would. As Wade had pointed out, the things she wanted to know weren't likely to show up on a Google search. She had no idea what she'd find when she got to Riddlesville, or what she hoped to come away with when she left. Answers, perhaps. Closure, hopefully. And a way forward. She had arranged store coverage for the next 3 days, and was already packed. But now, as she popped in to make sure Tamara and Aileen had gotten the doors open without any hitches, she couldn't help wondering if the trip to West Virginia was a mistake. She was reaching for the door, her mind a million miles away, when she barreled into Wade as he stepped onto the sidewalk with a cup of coffee in his hand. "Oh, no!" Christy Lynn stared at his dripping shirt in dismay. "You're soaked. I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention." Wade seemed surprised to see her, but took the coffee dripping down his shirt front in stride, blotting the stain absently with a soggy paper napkin.
"I didn't expect to see you. Tamara said you were taking a few days off."
"With Mother's Day over, I thought it would be a good time."
"You're going, aren't you? To see Loretta Rawlings."
She forced herself to meet his gaze squarely. "Yes."
"You weren't going to tell me?"
No, she wasn't. She'd thought about it, feeling she owed it to him after he had helped her, but in the end, she had decided against it. "I knew you'd try to talk me out of it."
"I already tried that. Clearly, it didn't work. And you don't need my approval."
"No, I don't. But I wish you could understand why I have to do this. I'm not going to Riddlesville to break Loretta Rawlings' heart."
"I know you're not. And it's not her heart I'm worried about."
Christy Lynn wasn't sure how to respond to that, and so she said nothing at all.
"Take care of yourself," Wade said, his voice suddenly gentle. "It's a long way to West Virginia."
"I made it here from Maine."
"True enough. Still."
He reached for the cell phone peeking from the side pocket of her purse and began tapping the screen. After a moment, he handed it back.
"All right, I'm in there. Just in case you get sleepy while you're driving. Or if you just want to talk."
She smiled awkwardly. His concern was both touching and unsettling. "I'll be fine."
"Yes, you will. Just the same, I'll leave mine on."
Riddlesville was a gray and gritty town, made all the more dismal by the steady drizzle that had been falling all afternoon. Christy Lynn couldn't help cringing as she drove through the derelict downtown, block after block of rundown buildings, vacant storefronts, and dirty sidewalks. She was relieved when she finally reached the stop sign at the edge of town, though what awaited her on the other side proved no less depressing. Ramshackle houses with crumbling chimneys and sagging porches, yards choked with broken baby strollers and cast-off recliners, all reminiscent of a childhood she'd just as soon forget. Organized neighborhoods eventually gave way to a more sparse landscape, lots pocked with rusty trailers and rotting barns. Christy Lynn's stomach clenched when she spotted the sign for Red Bud Road. She'd been driving for hours, wondering if she'd ever reach her destination. But now that she was close, her doubts began to resurface. How did one go about broaching the subject of adultery with a grieving grandmother? Christy Lynn followed the deserted clay track for more than a mile, wondering if she'd missed a turn or misread the sign. Finally, she spotted a small clapboard structure set back from the road, the yard a rough patch of sparse brown scrub. She let her foot off the gas, approaching at an idle, certain now that she had made a wrong turn. The place was little more than a shack, with a listing front porch
and a roof patched in places with squares of weathered plywood. In the side yard, a cracked kiddie pool contained several inches of slimy green water, and then there was an old Chevy.